The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
Let's continue then, going back to 1 Corinthians, if you'll turn over there, 1 Corinthians. I want to talk about a man who had a dream. He was a church member. He had a dream about being taken to heaven. And when he came up there to heaven, he saw Gabriel there at the pearly gates, and Gabriel was standing there before a huge lectern, and on top of that lectern were two magnificent, huge books, one on each side. And the man couldn't resist. He asked Gabriel in his dream, he said, What are these two books here? Gabriel explained, well, this one over here is the book of life, and this one over here is the one of recording all the people that are destined for the lake of fire. And so the man, he just couldn't resist. He said, well, I have a question to ask. Are there any eternal Church of God people in that lake of fire book? And Gabriel said, oh, yeah, sure they are. And he said, are there any living people in that lake of fire book? And he says, of course, there's some of them there. And then he said, well, what about United? Or what about Cogwa? He stammered. Well, certainly, Gabriel said, there's some of them there. Some of there, too. Then the man asked about the other book, the book of life. He said, are there any people from the Church of the Eternal God in the book of life? And Gabriel said, no, there's none of them. And he said, well, what about living members? Are there living members in that book? And he said, no, none of those either. And he said, well, what about Cogwa and United? Are there any of those people in there? And Gabriel said, none either. And the man goes, well, what's going on? Did anybody make it? I mean, who is in there? Who made it in the book of life? And Gabriel says, well, we only have Christians written in there. It's cute, but it makes an interesting point, doesn't it? I'm sure that everyone gets the point to one degree or another. 1 Corinthians 1 verse 10. Here's a major issue in the church today. Verse 10, now I plead with you, brethren. So here he is pleading with the brethren by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ that you all speak the same thing and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. This was Paul's desire. And so I want us to think for a minute. From God's point of view, we're not a part of any human organization. He's a jealous God. From his point of view, we belong only to him. That's the point, and that's the point I want to talk about today. You know, God wants us to live the way that Paul is describing here in Corinthians. He wants us to be speaking all the same thing. He wants no divisions among us. He wants us to be of the same mind, and he wants us to be able to all make the same kind of judgments. So I want us to understand this in context, that God allows in life a variety of likes and dislikes. You can have all kinds of likes and dislikes regarding what you wear, what you eat, where you live, how you live, what your home looks like. We have infinite variety of choice in this life. And so he gives infinite freedom to every individual. But when it comes to Christians, they are going to speak the same thing about Christ. They are going to believe the same doctrines he does. And they are all going to live by the same set of rules he does. And to me, this truth etches itself into our minds bit by bit the longer we live. And as we experience life, it just carves its way into our memory, and so God's law becomes written in our hearts and in our minds. I want to mention a point that Dan Quinn mentioned to me as I talked to him this week. He said something that I think all of us should understand today. I want you to listen to this. He said this, the higher we go up the mountain, the larger the world looks to us. And he said this, the closer we get to the top, the smaller we look to ourselves. And this really clicked with me. The closer we get to God, the bigger the world that he lives in looks to us, and the smaller our differences look. The closer we get to God, the smaller our differences look. The closer we get to the top, the smaller we look to ourselves. The closer we get to God, that is. And so the point I'm making is this. The more we think like him, speak like him, and live like him, the more we're going to be like him. And the point I make is, look at it for a moment. From the perspective of what we experience in life. Now imagine a star football team, and the coach tells the team to go out, and they're going to have to punt. But as they all go out onto the field, suddenly the captain starts waving his hands. No, 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 we're not going to do that. We want to set up to try to make a first down. You know, once there was one voice. Now there's two voices. You see how confusing that begins to get. On another level, there was a long-standing president of a company, and he had a division meeting, and he told everyone and all the department heads, he said, look, we're going to have to make some changes here, and I'm going to change the way things are done within our company. And he outlined his plan for the company, and after the meeting was over, the vice president went out, and he went to each one of the department heads, and he said, don't go along with that. That's not going to work. Go and do the same things you've always done. Don't listen to him. So you understand what happens. They're getting two messages here. What are they going to do? Then there's a professor, and he's in college, and he's speaking in his class, and he's saying to everybody, this is really important. I want you to listen to it. And then they listen to it. They take their notes. And then afterwards, the faculty aide comes up to the students after the professor leaves, and he says, that's not important. It probably won't even be on the test, you know. Don't worry about it. So you get these different messages coming to us. But my point is, I want you to think in this perspective that the professor, the president, you know, the coach of the football team is a type of Christ and the way he is to us. He's telling us one thing, but we have a myriad of other people, other organizations, and they're telling us a different message, and it's happening all the time. And that's why Paul here is talking about unity together. So imagine yourself now, I'm going to take another trip, imagine yourself in a church. And this church is a church that has, really a closeness with one another. There's a unity that's very obvious. There's a loyalty that everybody has towards one another. And everybody's speaking the same thing. And all of a sudden, new leaders come in, and they begin to change things. They have some new ideas, and then at first you begin to think, well, you know, some of those ideas aren't so bad. But then after a while, you go, wait a minute, some of these ideas are really heretical, and I don't know what I'm going to have to do, but eventually you think I'm going to have to leave, and others then begin to see the same thing. Now, think about this. They have to leave also. The thing is that everybody didn't leave at the same time. Some accepted part of that false teaching. Others didn't accept the false teaching, but there was an attitude that they kind of liked about the way it was presented. And so they accepted some of that. So they weren't the same with everybody else in their way of thinking and their perspective on what the church is and what our goal is and what our work is. And so to me, I make an analogy to what happened to all of us. As it's like you're in a high-rise building and you're all in an elevator. And then the new people come in, and then the elevator's going down. And on every level, some people are getting off. And they're getting off at different levels, all at different levels. And each group that gets off forms a church, and they form a leader from the group that got off, but they're all teaching somewhat different things. I accepted some they didn't accept. And so everybody's gotten off at a different place. So it's become very confusing to people today, and a lot are asking, well, what do we do? It's very difficult to navigate our lives today, difficult to navigate our friendships and loyalties with family and friends and other groups. And people are very uncertain about all of this. So how do we maintain church unity in all of this? Because it's been well said that those events happening in the Church of Corinth are very similar to those things that are happening to us at the end of the age, and that's why we want to go through this reading. So here Paul had spent a couple of years raising up this church, and then he moved on from there to raise up other churches, and while he was gone, false teachers crept in, and they mixed Gnosticism and their ideas with Christianity. A couple years later, Paul gets a letter from the church, and it says this in verse 11, "For it's been declared unto me concerning you, my brethren, by those of Chloe's household, that there are contentions among you." They had division going on in the church that had only been existing for about 4 or so years. You know, in another place, by the way, 1 Corinthians 11, if you'll go there. 1 Corinthians 11. In another place, Paul actually admitted that he thought, you know, in retrospect, he's thinking here, that there has to be divisions when everybody isn't speaking the same thing. When people come in and disturb a congregation, when people come in and start teaching other things, when all kinds of doctrines start to appear different, there has to be a reality that we can't all speak the same thing. Once corrupted, we aren't going to be able to believe and act the same way in every case. So we can't always expect people to be on the very same page we are when this kind of corruption takes place. And there's an important reason for this. 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 18. "For first of all, when you come together as a church," he writes, "I hear that there are divisions among you, and in part, I believe it." And then he says something really interesting. He says, "There must also be factions among you, so that those who are approved may be recognized among you." Back to 1 Corinthians 1. But you get the point that he's making, that you get in any group that's had false teachers come into it, and he says there has to be factions among you so that the guys that are doing the right thing, that people can come in and they can go, oh, these match what Christ is saying over here. These are approved of him. You know, has to be like that. And it's always going to be that way, I believe, until Christ finally returns, that we're going to have this element of divisiveness in the church, you know. And the reason is this, and it's always this. It's because we look to men instead of God. That's the reason. And that's exactly what the brethren in Corinth were doing in 1 Corinthians 1. Let's go to the next verse, 12. "Now I say this, that each of you says, I'm of Paul, or I'm of Apollos, or I'm of Cephas, or I'm of Christ." You ever hear anything like that today? You know, I'm of Philadelphia, you know, I'm of the faithful flock, I'm of this, I'm of that, you know, I'm of the ECOG. Remember my intro, I thought it was cute, but I thought it was so pointed, you know. God's not going to have people from these organizations that are tied to them and loyal to them. He's going to have people in the kingdom that are tied to him. And this is something we've got to understand regarding division in the church. Now look, Paul, Christ and Peter, they were all speaking the same thing, really. They all were. But you know how it is with human beings. Other people were hearing things differently. Everybody, you can have one person speak and then ask everybody else what was his main message, you know, and they might come up with several different ideas from it. And it's because we kind of tend to align ourselves with one personality over another. We have certain likes and dislikes personally, and we have human preferences, And sometimes we're drawn to one person. I know that there are certain times in the church where I've been very drawn to certain teachers, some of which are no longer in the church, you know, today. But I was drawn to them because I like their style. And so, you know, there's a certain element of this that is going to naturally take place, that we're going to like one more than another. But we must not be identifying with them. We must be identifying with Christ. So a lot of this depends, too, on past experience and what you know of the Bible and what your experience in the church has been. But today you and I find ourselves in a very unique position, and that is that we are at a point in this age where there are two church eras that are in existence simultaneously, two churches with very different ways of thinking and living and approaching the Scriptures. We are in the last era of God's church today. Without any question in my mind, we're in what the Bible would call the Laodicean age, as it were. And you can see this very spirit when you look at the various nations around the world, because Laodicea, remember, as Terry told us once, means, the very word means, Laos is people, and Dicea means judge or people fit for judgment. But everywhere, everybody is judging for themselves. And so even today, it doesn't matter what the Constitution says. We make decisions the way we feel about things and according to what we believe. So you see it in the corporate world and you see it in our political world. And I say this, spirit of Laodicea is like an invisible force that pervades the entire earth everywhere. But because we're in this age, it doesn't mean that we're all Laodicean. However, the Philadelphian era still exists simultaneously. Both of them are going to exist until the end. So knowing that we're in the Laodicean age gives us a great advantage. It's important to understand this because Laodicea is the primary spirit that's in this world. It is the primary spirit that is affecting God's people. And if we want to qualify as Philadelphians, we have to know what spirit it is that we have to resist to maintain the unity that the Philadelphian era has in their love and their worship of God. So, you know, again, you see it in the world where government officials think they have the ability to judge. I believe that there are so many people that lack education in America today, and the uninformed think they have a right to judge. You know, they're making the decisions of who are some of our elected officials are going to be, and their judgment is based on being uninformed, and that is the truth. You know, and some ministers also look to their judgment rather than the law of God. And all of us can fall prey to this. And that is a point that happened to those in Corinth. And it is a point that can happen and is happening to many of us. So we've got to look at Christ's example before we judge even ourselves. That's our basis for judgment. It's Him and Him alone. So, because we don't do that, a lot of times ministers in God's church have mistaken ideas, strange ideas, and that's where these doctrines come from. They come from men, strange ideas. You know, we have seven or eight people, different kinds of people, groups of people keeping different calendars. We have the, you know, sacred names group of people who believe you should say Yahweh or Jehovah or even Yahuwah and other names that they have as well. But the division just keeps spreading more and more. Once you have one split, you know what happens. If you've done it once, you can do it again. It's like divorce. It's easy enough to do once you've done it. You know, so anyway, many different views on the resurrections. You know, some today are avidly saying only two, and some else are saying three. Then there's the lunar Sabbaths. Again, you keep the Sabbath only on the new moon. And so you started on the new moon, and there's four Sabbaths that you keep, and then you have some extra days, and then they just skip those days and go to the next new moon. I mean, it doesn't that sound insane that anyone would think that? 400 or 500 people in the world today believe like that, and they live like that. As crazy as can be. Second Timothy 2. How can you get that kind of division is beyond me. Second Timothy 2. Okay, I can do this. You know, different men will preach on different topics and say it's the truth. And I still remember the title of one man's magazine. Can you imagine this? The church has been wrong for 2,000 years regarding Passover. Can you imagine the arrogancy of someone that would write that and paste it across the title of their magazine? Now, here was a guy, and people are following him. Hundreds and hundreds of people are following this man, who was kicked out of the church, of course, way before he started his own ministry, you know. But it's all become so confusing to people, and it is as divisive today, if not more so, than it was in Corinth at the time. And at least I say we've been warned in 2 Timothy 2 and in verse 14. It says this. Remind them of those things, charging them before the Lord not to strive about words to no profit, to the ruin of the hearers. Be diligent, he says, to present yourself approved of God, a work who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And then he says, shun profane and idle babblings, for they will increase to more ungodliness. And it's my hope that all of us can see and tell the truth between, see the difference between vain and profane babblings and the truth of God. Because he says this, these things will increase to more ungodliness, and their message will spread like cancer. Hymenaeus and Philetus are of this sort, who have strayed concerning the truth, saying the resurrection's already past, and they overthrow the faith of some. And we see this very thing happening today, don't we? We see people that are coming up with doctrines that are completely out of sync and unexplainable, setting dates, you know. They're doing this kind of thing, and it's doing nothing but causing division within the church of God. And I remember thinking as I read the Bible, you know, Christ never got into arguments with Pharisees or the Sadducees. He never argued over petty doctrines. He gave explanations when people came to him, you know. And I say this, the closer we get to Christ, the less foolish human arguments are going to affect us. You know, if we stick directly with what the scriptures say, and this is a must, if we don't go off preaching about those things that I believe are inconsequential, you know, if we don't give credibility to spurious books, as some do, looking at the Apocrypha and the Pseudographica, you know, this will not happen. It won't be that we'll get caught off on some obscure subject, and we will not become self-promoting, as so many really do. It'll be about living right. That's what it'll be about. That's what our teaching will be about. That's what we individually will be about, trying to overcome a search and destroy mission. That's what it was when we first came in the church, wasn't it? Wasn't that what unleavened bread taught us? Wasn't that our purpose, that we were going to search ourselves and we were going to find sin and we were going to put it out, and it's a lifelong endeavor, it doesn't stop? That's what it should be about. That's what our lives should be about, not some off-the-wall doctrine at all. And so it'll be about imitating Christ. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 19 says this, nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having this seal. The Lord knows those who are his, and let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity. That's the issue. That's our issue, isn't it? What do? We don't have to know. We don't have to ask. We don't have to go to someone to find out. We already know. Be the best you can be. Be like Christ. That is the issue. And that's what needs to be preached, and that's what needs to be lived. It really does. This is what our calling is all about. It's not about picky doctrines. It just isn't. There's something so big going on here with us learning to be like Christ, learning to think like he thinks, learning to speak the things he would speak and make the kinds of judgments he would make. That's what our calling is, to get closer and closer to him. And that's why we don't follow men at all. We don't follow the ideas of men. We don't follow their personalities. We don't follow things unless they are of Christ. So we ought to think about this when we speak about one man's church or another man's church. I think it's something else. I mean, even some people will say, my church, you know, it's not your church. You know, it reminds me of a time, it was years ago, but the second guy in command of this whole fairly large splinter, he called me one day and he said he gave me new instructions. He wanted me to give all the men and women in my congregations, he wanted me to give them this new judgment the church had made. And I said, well, we can't do that. That's wrong, you know. And he said, yes, we can. Of course we can do it. It's our church. And I said, no, man, it's not our church. We can't just do this. This is not right. And I sent him a paper later, and later they called and said, yeah, it's off. But the whole thinking, I mean, when he said that, it's our church, so he could do what he wanted with it. That is so scary. That is, like, really frightening. None of us must ever think like that. We've always got to remember the church belongs to Christ. This one, the other ones, all the splinters are his. They're his. And all the people in those splinters are his. And we've got to respect that fact. We really do. Anyway, to me, this is kind of a cute example. A mother looked out her window one day, saw her son Johnny playing church with three kittens. Who do you think was a pastor? Well, probably Johnny, yeah. She turned her back for a minute to finish up some of her chores. And then all of a sudden she heard this loud meowing and this scratching at the door. And she looked out the window and she saw Johnny was baptizing a cat. And she said, Johnny, don't do that. You're going to drown those kittens if you do that. And he says, well, they should have thought about that before they joined my church. Kind of interesting point there. Anyway, and now more than ever, anybody can start a church. I mean, you don't even have to be ordained. All you have to do is be able to have an idea. You can preach, you know. And I want to remind everybody about this, because there's a lot of people now that are just speaking and they've never been ordained. They're good speakers, you know, but that's not the issue. The issue is, or there is an enormously important value to being ordained, and that is if a person has to have some qualifications in order to be ordained, they have to be known by somebody, and it has to take time so a person can prove themselves and you can see the track the individual's on. But you understand, if you have someone responsible for that, they're going to go slow and careful because they know Christ's going to say, look what you did. Look at the trouble you caused. You know, one of the deacons, you know, it says later on, one of the deacons went off track and started a Gnostic group. And, you know, you've got to be really careful. And so if you have nobody that's in charge, no one's responsible for ordaining other people, you can go any way you want. We can all be ordained. We can all, you understand, we can all preach. We can all do this. But you have to be able to do it to men who have proven their doctrine is steady and steadfast. They don't flip back and forth. They're on track and they live that way. You understand my point? That's why God has us have a man. It's not that the man is important. It has nothing to do with it. It's just that somebody's got to be responsible, you know. And so you got someone who's not ordained in a church. What does it cost him to change doctrines? It doesn't cost him anything, you know. But if you're ordained, he's going to come down harder on you, he says. And so you're much more careful about making any changes or much more careful about the things you teach. And so here we have it again, another aspect that just causes more and more division within the church of God. And I'm saying this is what we've got to resist if we want to maintain our qualifications for being Philadelphian. We've got to live, patiently live by God's word. Do what he says, not what some other man says. And as the scriptures say, that's the problem. They were looking to this man or that man or some other man. I'm of him, I'm of him, I'm of this. You know, no, we're only of Christ. And I think that Jason brought that out very well in the reading today. So anyway, all this depends, our ability to see straight, our ability to make wise judgments, our ability to speak the same thing, all depends on how close we are to God. We can, of course, think for ourselves. Of course, we can speak our mind on various topics. Of course, we can disagree on one thing or another. But when it comes to God's kingdom, Philippians, if you would, Philippians 2, when it comes to his kingdom, when it comes to his nature, when it comes to the things about God and his kingdom, there's only one. There's just one single way that we can do this, and it's this. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. So you begin to get the point. This is the key. I'm giving right now. It may not sound profound, or it may not sound great or anything, or I may not have an expertise in speech to get people to see how important this is. But this is the whole key to the kingdom of God. It is the whole key to why we're called. It's what we're about and what we must be about, and it's the only way that we can maintain unity at all. We know if a man thinks he is something, what do we know? Nothing. We know if somebody's trying to advertise that they are somebody in God's church, they're nobody. You've never heard any prophet, you've never heard anybody say they were somebody, did you, ever? But we hear it in the church of God today, don't we? And when you hear it, it's a red flag. It means no. They might as well just have a big flag waving, no, no, not me, you know, while they're saying me. And so you get my point. It's just, it's very obvious, you know, you can't do that. We're not to judge by outward appearance, it says. So somebody might be good looking, striking or something, you know, and evidently Paul wasn't, you know. His letters were profound, but in person they were kind of disappointed, you know. So what? And avoid vain babblings and talking about esoteric things or pieces of what still linger in the church, and that is of Gnosticism, you know. There's only one thing that unites us. And I'm telling you, this one thing will unite us around the world. This one thing is going to unite you and me with people in other splinter groups who are like us. They have people in other groups that are seeking to think like Christ and to have his mind. And it will link us inextricably with all of the people who are like us and doing what we're doing down through the ages to the beginning of time. We're linked together. There is a unity with all of us. There can't be a unity with every single person on the block or every single person within some churches, but we can have a unity with all those that are truly seeking the kingdom, can't we? Yes. Because all we have to do is start working on thinking more like Christ, getting closer to him in prayer and study, and trying to live more and more, trying to live. How would Christ do it? And strive to do that until the end, no matter what, no matter what losses we might experience. We do that, and we're connected. We are united. And I think out of that flows a love for one another, because it talks about love towards God and love towards neighbor. And both of those are symbols or signs. They're examples showing that we are a true Christian. But don't you see that? You think like I do. I think like you do. We both see it the same way. And that, what a unity that produces. And we're just a few of the Lord of hosts. And there's others in other congregations, others all around the world that are trying to do this sincerely and honestly. They're not trying to play any games, not trying to be anybody special. They're just trying to submit to the rule of Christ in their lives, to his image, and to imitate him in their lives to the degree that they can. And so he says in 1 Corinthians, again, if you'll go back there to chapter 1, 1 Corinthians 1, and verse 13. Look at what he says. He says, you guys are divided. And then he says, one, you're of this guy, you're of that guy, you're of the other guy. He could be talking to the church of God in this age so easily. But look at what he says here in verse 13. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Were you baptized in the name of Paul? No. You were baptized not into any sect or denomination, nothing that belongs to a human being. You were baptized into the name of Christ and baptized into the name of the Father. And Christ suffered so terribly that it's almost unspeakable. And I don't think you or I could ever come to grips with what he went through, and even just having to face it, even though it hadn't happened yet. This is what he did, and he did it for us. How dare we have a loyalty to some man? How dare we have an ego that makes us think we're something in the light of what he did for us? You understand my point? No one will ever do for you, no matter how close they are, usually a mate or a brother or sister or mother and father. They love us, they'll do things for us, but no one would go through that kind of torture that he went through except our God and our Creator. And we owe him, I think, an enormous sense of loyalty for that. John 10. John 10. It must be older I get, wasting words. Time goes by quicker all the time. He alone is the one that we owe allegiance to. In chapter 10 and verse 1, most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter into the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. And you and I see this over and over again with ministers wearing suits at over $1,000. I remember talking to one minister. He says, oh, I always pay at least $1,000 for my suits, and very important to him. Ministers living in a pretty grand style with really nice homes. And one man today, I think next month actually, he's going to be put in jail for 5 counts of criminal convictions for misuse of people's funds. Millions of dollars he spent that widows sent in and people that didn't have the money sent in because they believed he was a true minister because he said he was, and he was setting predictions and dates. So Christ, not some man, is the true shepherd. John 10 and verse 2. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. That's who Christ is. He is the one who is our shepherd. And then after he comes through, he, of course, leads us out. To him, the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. You understand my point, that Christ, you know, we, like the ministry, would be like the doorkeeper, and we, you know, he comes in through us and go out through us. But Christ, as our shepherd, he knows each one of us by name. You understand, that's very personal. He isn't just leading a group like some corporate president or some division man or man has a bunch of people. This is God who knows every single person inside and out, and he knows them by name, and he calls them by name. And that's the kind of relationship that we are to have with him. And so it says in verse 4, and when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. They will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of a stranger. Well, how is it that so many people know, or seem to know, or seem to follow the voice of strangers? What is it? I'm going to postulate to you it's this very same thing I'm talking about. They haven't developed the mind of Christ, that they are still in some sort of church structure, following church rules. You know, I mean, years ago we'd follow how long a skirt length was, how long hair lengths were. You know, all of these things mattered. But what I'm saying is the individual who's a true Christian and has a relationship with Christ is getting to know him. We're spending time in prayer, just not a bang, 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 and boom, we're gone. Got to get busy, got to get my prayer in. No, we want to get that prayer. We need that, get that prayer in. We need the contact with Christ. We need to study, but we should want to study. And we should, when we study, we should be drinking in the point of view, the way of thinking. You understand what I'm saying? Am I making sense about how to get closer to Christ, how to get to know him, and then practice what he says and see how it works? And after a while, the two of you become more and more like one, and you're imitating Christ and you're being like him. You are not going to hear somebody else's voice and say, there's a good idea, I'll follow that, because you know the truth. You know the true one. It'll never happen. This is the key to unity in the church. It is the key to doing away with division, and that's up to each one of us. We're not going to be united with every single person who professes Christ, no, but with those people that are truly seeking to imitate him, live like him, and think like him, we will be united with them. And it's such a treat when we meet up with them, isn't it? And we can talk. I remember talking late into the night. We go to Spokesman's Club and we'd stay in the parking lot. We couldn't stop talking about the kingdom and about Christ and about what things would be like until midnight, you know, and I'd get in much trouble, of course, for all of that. So look, whatever we do, we've got to be doing it for Christ. And this is only going to happen when we are close to our shepherd. He's got to be first and foremost in our thoughts regarding all the different things that we do. And this is a great truth, that if we do this, we're going to be one with him as he is with the Father. He said that we can be that close to him. He says, I don't pray for these alone, but I pray for those that shall believe through their word, that they may be one as you and I are one, Father. That's the kind of unity Paul was talking about. That's the kind of unity that we are to strive to develop, to hear his voice, so that eventually we march to that same beat, the same beat as Christ. And I remember reading in a book years ago, it's a good book, I recommend it if it's still around, and that is Fearfully and Wonderfully Made. It was a doctor wrote the book, and he was just going on about the creation. He had little snippets, vignettes of aspects of creation, and one of them I thought was really interesting, where he said they did a little experiment, and they had a Petri dish, you know, and had some water in it, and they put some heart cells from a chicken in there. And he said the heart cells, each cell pulses a little bit, each one. And he said when they put them in the Petri, each one was beating at a separate beat. But after a while, one of the other heart cells would pick up the beat, and they were beating in unison. And then pretty soon three, and then pretty soon four, and then six and seven, and pretty soon every heart cell in that Petri dish was beating to the same pulse. And that's how we should be in the church of God. The closer we get to Christ, you understand, the water is like a type of the Spirit of God, and Christ is the one beating the drum. And we're to march to that drummer. And the closer we get, each one of us, it doesn't happen instantaneously, but bit by bit, we come together until we are beating to the same beat. We are thinking the same things. We're on the same page. We're on the same level. That's unity. That's what he wants from us, that kind of unity. So, about Christ and about the kingdom, we've got to keep our eyes on him and not on men, because that will turn us away. Let's go to Romans. Romans 8. We'll finish up over there. Romans 8. We'll hear Christ's voice, and that is that still, small voice in our conscience. And if we pay attention to that and practice paying attention to that, we will hear his voice. But we've got to be listening for his voice in our lives, listening for it. So anyway, I want you to think about it today in chapter 8 and verse 34. Who is he that condemns? It is Christ who died and furthermore is also risen, who's even at the right hand of God, who makes intercession for us. That is an amazing thing. After all the things we've done wrong, that he would be on our side to the Father, and that he would ensure that we make it in that kingdom. And then he says, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? Who's going to separate us from Christ? Nobody can take you out of his hand except for one person, and that's you. You can let go. He isn't letting go. He'll never leave us or forsake us, and he wants that kind of unity. Not just now, but he's basing this, is what he's going to base the future kingdom on, and the relationship we're going to live together with for the rest of all eternity. So let's strive, really strive, seriously strive, to make our lives better, to make them more like his, to study for the purpose of understanding how he thinks, and to keep praying to him, beseeching him and begging him for those that are sick, and begging him to help us understand him more and be more unified with him. And if we're unified with him, we will be unified in the church of God.